Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during the broadcast, you can feel free to call them in at area code 646-716-4893. And if you're feeling a little bit radio shy, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And before I introduce my special co-host for tonight, Dr. Brian Hooper, I just want to make a couple fast announcements. First of all, we're getting closer and closer to April when we're having our next healing event. It's going to be right outside of Washington, D.C. in Dulles, Virginia. So if you'd like information on the weekend or think you can benefit by it, please write me at bonkay@aol.com or go to my website at gayhusbands.com and click into the link to get information. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet others in your situation who can understand everything that you're thinking, and you don't even have to say a word. And it's filled with lots of good advice, lots of sisterly companionship. New friendships are made that last for years to come. Lots of support is given, and we have some wonderful therapists that will be coming to our group to help us with exercises on healing. So there is no cost for the weekend, just the cost of dinner for one night and a group rate on the hotel room at a beautiful Hilton hotel. So if you would like the details, let me know, and I'd love to meet you there or see you again. Also, sending big love out to Jen from our group, who's in her recovery process, and I heard she's really rebounded and doing great. Jen, all of us are thinking about you and hope you get this love and message. So now, without further ado, I will introduce Dr. Brian Hooper. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Hey, Bonnie. I'm even better now because I'm with you.
Thank you, Brian. That's how I feel whenever you're here.
You're
it's always a sense of relief to all of us.
And, you know,
since we get to hear from you.
Since we're just on the cusp of February, I'm going to ask you if you'll be my Valentine this month.
I will. I definitely will.
Good. Super. And since
I'll send you big
kisses clear with
from
each
a
other,
distance.
Yeah.
I'll send you a little
Valentine's
card,
clear with each other,
too.
You know, it's perfect.
Huh.
Yeah.
I know.
We're, yeah. You know what you're getting
absolutely.
Into with me, honey.
I know a lot of women will be jealous that you picked me, but that's okay. Because they find a lot
all
of comfort
right.
from the words that you give us, and we know that you're in our corner and you understand us. And for
yep.
those of you who haven't heard Dr. Hooper before, he's my monthly co-host. But Dr. Hooper is extraordinarily wonderful in the sense that he really understands the pain that we go through. And he really helps many of the husbands that we have to come to terms with themselves as far as accepting who they are and being honest with us and doing the right thing. And
that's
Dr.
right.
Hooper
you know,
is
I've,
a gay therapist, right? You are openly gay.
I am.
And
that's
you're not
right.
hiding that fact. And you've never
nope.
been married.
Nope. That's right.
And you never feel
yep.
the need to find a woman to marry, right?
No, that's exactly right. No, I knew that would be disingenuous and just not, it would not be authentic for me. And I recognized that as far back as high school.
You know, which brings me to a question that so many times in our support room, you know, people are discussing this issue, Brian. You knew all along that you just couldn't do this. But why is it
right.
so difficult for so many others to come to that conclusion? You know, what do you think is the deciding factor?
So one of the things is that I don't think our society encourages us to take an honest look within and do what we in the therapeutic and spiritual field call inner work. We're encouraged to be consumers of goods and to be people who conform ourselves to you know, societal expectations. I just happened to be one of those odd kids that was interested in philosophy and theology early on, and it made me do a lot of inner looking. And so when I did that inner looking, I discovered something I wasn't comfortable with. I was hoping might change, but it didn't, and I knew if it didn't change, and it never does, you know, I couldn't, with integrity, marry somebody. But I just think that we're not invited to look very deep within. And so a lot of people want to they want to get all the perks that go with being married. They want to please mom and dad, and they want to conform to what their church tells them. And so they experience some attraction towards men, but they tell themselves, oh, that's just, you know, that's just a phase I'm going through, and it'll all change once I get married. And they kind of try to shove it down. Well, as Carl Jung said years ago, you know, whatever you push down in one place will come up someplace else. That which we resist persists.
Hmm. And that's a really good thought. And I'm not, I wouldn't mind answering a question. It might be a little personal, but I don't think you really, you know, are too hidden about. You're a man in your 50s, right?
Yep, I am. I'm 58.
So we, you know, you're younger than I am, but you grew up in a generation where there still wasn't a lot known about homosexuality. Would you agree about that?
At that time, yes. Yes, exactly.
So what were the messages you were hearing about gay when you were growing up, if you remember?
That it was a choice.
What? Mm-hmm.
And Bonnie, I don't know why, but I'm getting feedback of my own voice on my end. I don't know if you can control that at all from yours or not. Just to let you know.
No, I really can't. You
okay.
want to call back in?
Okay. Yeah, let me hang up and I'll call you back right now, okay? All right.
That sounds good. All right, so while Brian's doing that, we'll be sitting and waiting for him to call back in to discuss that issue because so many of the men that we're married to are in that age group right now in their 50s. And the problem is that many of them do say that they didn't understand it. Hold on, here comes Brian back. One second. Okay, how's that any better?
Well, let's see. Oh, good, I'm not hearing myself. As much as I like to hear myself talk, It was kind of disturbing.
Well, you're loud and clear here, so that's good.
Where were we?
So you were talking about, you know, when you were growing up, that people did feel it was a choice.
Yeah.
It wasn't something
right.
you had to accept.
Wasn't a choice, and during that period of time, it was still considered a pathology according to the diagnostic and statistical manual. So people could get a diagnosis for being gay. Many people thought that it could change, and unfortunately some people still do, but now all the therapeutic alliances, the clinical social workers, American Psychological Association, etc., have all come out and said, no, we disavow any change therapy. It doesn't work, and in fact, it's actually psychologically disturbing to people. But at that point in time, it was thought that people could change. Religiously, it was thought to be sinful, and that's still the case with many religions today. Not all, but many of them. So there were a whole host of reasons why men my age and even younger who were still raised with that understanding would deny being gay to themselves even because of the consequences of facing the truth.
I think also there's still today so much misinformation out there. There's always answers for people who don't want to be gay, right?
Of course. It's a whole cottage industry.
Mm-hmm. And that's the saddest part of all, that so many people suffer unnecessarily because they do believe they can make the right choice as if it were a choice.
And
some
people
say, well, gay is my identity, but it's not my sexuality. Gay is my sexuality. It's not my identity. I'm not really clear on what those things mean at all.
Yeah. So I know within the Christian tradition, and I'll be very upfront, and people don't already know me, I am a Christian. I'm also an ordained Lutheran pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I went to a four-year seminary. I've been ordained for over 25 years. but within the Christian community, there are those people who will say, well, you may sense that you're gay, but in Christ, you're really straight, and you just need to come and recognize that. I think that that's really a perversion, but that's what some people have been told, and that's what they believe. We can't blame them for believing what their religious leaders have taught them. And so they're trying to claim their identity as a straight person, even though that's not their experience. So they will conform themselves socially to that. They'll try to behave that way, meaning that they will date women and some will marry, and they'll say, this is who I know I am inside, if I could just recognize it fully. And I think that's a self-deluding idea and far from the message of the core message of Christianity.
Is there any place specifically that they keep quoting from? Because, you know, I'm certainly not a Christian scholar by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I have read the New Testament, but I haven't really seen anything that pinpoints it to being, you know, a crime.
Well, there's nothing that talks about being gay as we understand that today. The passages that are quoted from the Christian scripture are relative to people who are presumed to be what we would call straight today, but are engaging, for instance, what's quoted from Romans chapter 1, I think it's verse 18, really is speaking to people who are thought to be straight, but they're engaging in orgy kind of religious rituals and engaging with sex with each other for cultic religious purposes, which was the practice in the day in which that was written. But our understanding of what it means to be gay, or to use the older word homosexual, goes back to what the 1900s and a German physician who coined the term. So there wasn't even the understanding that people were constitutionally oriented in terms of their affection and their erotic desire towards members of the same sex until the 19th century.
And then it became the first you know, discussion of it or first known?
Really, the first discussion of what we would call gay today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before that, it was thought that everybody was straight, and anything that wasn't straight was just a perversion of that. Even though there was celebrated in the Middle Ages love between people of the same sex, and there, but it was never really discussed.
I haven't seen it. I mean, I know that they, you know, even with the Jewish religion, with Orthodoxy, they kind of take a statement of man laying with man as being against whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm,
but I don't
mm-hmm,
see any in-depth discussions on how, you know, if you do this, you're deviant, you're going to be excommunicated from the community. And this is what happens to religious Jews. So you shouldn't think it just happens to, you know, ultra-Christians or Muslims. I think this is, in many religions, totally unaccepted. And yet, I'm never quite sure how it got to this, you know, this far as, you know, punishment to people. Like when you look at countries like in Africa, which is so disturbing to me, what goes on in Uganda.
I know.
If you're gay, then you get killed. And I saw a documentary, and it was really so horrifying about two women who were lesbians. And the government found out, and they sent some soldiers there to rape one of the women. You know, six different soldiers raped her, and they said, you obviously don't know how good it is to be with a man. And, of course, they left her impregnated, and she had that child. And, of course, the girlfriend left her because she couldn't deal with the whole thing. But for women, they'll just rape you, but for men, they'll kill you. And I just don't get it.
Right.
I'm really sorry, no matter how I try
to
think about this.
So the roots of this are male dominance. And if we go back to a lot of the marriage laws that we see in the Hebrew scripture, for instance, it's all about protecting the what we would call the genetic line, the bloodline. So, for instance, a man could be married to a woman, and if he happens to have sex with another woman that's not married to anyone, not betrothed to anyone, in the terms of Hebrew scripture, this is not adultery. The punishment the man gets for having sex with a woman that's not his own, that isn't already married, the punishment he gets is that he has to pay the bride price, and now he's got two wives. So it was very much about male dominance and control of bloodline to make sure that any male child born was from the father who is married to the woman, because that would be, you know, the first male that receives the primary inheritance. So it's very much about patriarchy and control. And this is why women usually don't get the kind of punishment for same-sex behavior that men do. Because they're nesting more with the patriarchy than the women are.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I know women who are lesbians in New York who come from Orthodoxy, and they're really cut off from their community too.
Yeah, but if we talk about societies where they put people to death,
they're not putting them to death right now, but they certainly are
excommunicating
them from the community. Right, not in New York.
Well, yes,
and not even in Africa. They just rape you compared to killing you. So I guess, you know.
Yeah, but men are put to death. In some places.
I know.
Like,
I just can't get beyond that.
I know.
It's just so horrific to me that the world allows this to go on without standing up to it and saying no.
Well, there's a whole host of reasons for that. Unfortunately, the world power, one of the major world powers is the United States, and I think it has to do with color of skin and, again, dominance as well. But that's another political bag that we really don't need to get into as we speak to the issues of your listeners, I think.
Yeah. I just, you know, once again, I'm trying to give the vision of why men are so afraid to have to deal with who they are. And I do understand that, and many times you just feel like you can overcome this if you're brought up with certain religions where it's not allowed that, if you try to be a good person, then they'll put good in there to try to make you feel bad if you're not. And men really do try. I mean, I do understand that. And you know what? I am sympathetic to a point.
Yes, you are.
You know, I do understand their struggle. And, you know, my heart does go out to some of these men. I mean, I cry with them.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean they can keep doing the wrong thing. They have to do the right thing.
Right,
and
exactly.
I always say anybody can make a mistake, but you have to fix it.
Right,
and
exactly.
And that's the problem.
Yep.
I don't know why it's so hard always to fix it.
And the men that I work with, and I just let me give a shout out to you as well on this one, Bonnie, and your show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this will also be an encouragement to the ladies. I've begun to lose track now of the men who have contacted me because of your show. They've listened to a podcast, or they've contacted you because they've listened to your show and you've sent them one specifically of me speaking about the situation with men. And they've reached out to me because of your show, and I've helped.
Mm-hmm.
I'm again losing count of the number of men I've helped come out to their wives because they found me because they found you. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you for encouraging them to always do the right thing because that's what's needed.
I really do, and it's painful, and I tell them exactly what you do. It will be the most difficult day of your life. When you do this, it will feel like a death because it is. The false self is dying, and that's
mm-hmm.
always painful. Yeah. But that's the only way you can be your authentic self, and the freedom that comes with that, and the freedom to really love this woman in a way that's honest can come out of what originally seems so painful. You know,
exactly. And
really
I tell them
the
that. I said,
thing.
You know, you married this woman. You said you were going to love her. You said you did love her. Okay, it didn't work out, not because she didn't try to love you, but because
right.
you're a gay man. And now you have to do
right.
the right thing.
Now you need to do the loving thing, which is to tell the truth. You know, love, here's the thing. I said this so often when I was in my internship year that they put it on a plaque and they gave it back to me when I left. I said, love is to want for and work for the best for another. Let me say that again. Love is to want for and work for the best for another. So
that's
you may
beautiful.
Not have the lovey-dovey feelings, but you do the thing which helps the other person be the most whole version of themselves that they can be. That's the loving thing.
When men come to me, Brian, and they say that they have a really happy marriage, don't you think they're kind of deluding themselves on that one?
When who says this to you?
When men come to me that, you know, they're suffering being in a marriage because they're gay, but they don't want to destroy such a happy, wonderful marriage.
Yeah, well, what I think that they want to say is there's calm and peace between us right now, and there are aspects of this the way it is that's working for me, and other people seem to be content with it, but the other people, i.e. the wife, doesn't really know what's going on. And you're taking, I would say to him, you're taking responsibility away from her. You're taking control of her reaction by not telling her. Let her know the truth, and then let her decide how happy it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can't decide for another person like that. That's not in your field of responsibility. That's in hers, and you're taking that away from her.
And do men, you know, finally understand that when you're working with them? Because that's an important concept.
Well, the ones that I've been working with have, because they've come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've not all had this, you know, the same journey to get there. Some are more direct about it than others. Some have to warm up to it more. But they get there.
Yes, and of course, it kind of might be a skewed kind of crowd because they're coming to me to start with. So they're ready to do the right
mm-hmm.
thing. But I think a lot of it is, you know, how you do the right thing.
I also have men who come to me th- through other channels as well, through just finding my website. And I'm very clear in my profile through Psychology Today that this is my area of specialty, is working with conflicted gay men who find themselves married. So they come through various avenues, but they all, mm-hmm. so far, I haven't had one yet look at me and say, oh, well, I'm done. This is going to be too hard, and walk away. They've mm-hmm. hung in there.
I think there are men who want to do the right things.
Yeah.
Once again, being honest with your wife is only the first piece of it, though. And that's the part that, yep. I wanted to talk a little bit about tonight, because women have a lot of problems on this next issue that I told them we'd be discussing, which is setting boundaries within the marriage,
yeah.
when it starts falling apart, and after the marriage, after it's over. And
yeah.
I always say that don't do as I do. I say, don't do it my way, because I can give wonderful advice, but look how long it took me to get here, because I was the worst mm-hmm. at setting boundaries with my ex-husband. And I guess because
yeah.
these marriages are different in the sense that in many cases, the women still love their husbands when they're splitting up with them. It's not like
mm-hmm.
these were destructive marriages and they hate each other. These women just find out and they're blindsided, or they knew something was wrong, but they build a life with a man for 20, 30, 40 years, and now all of a sudden, poof, it's gone because he's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But that
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean they hate him. Up until that moment,
right.
they loved him. So
right.
a lot of times they just don't understand, first of all, the whole phenomenon, but then also, where do the boundaries start and end? So maybe you can give some good advice
mm-hmm.
with that.
So I want to speak to both groups, those who are in marriages that have not yet come to a conclusion, and those who are dealing with the aftermath of that, okay? And I'm going to start with a place that's going to sound kind of odd. but here's my first tip. Make yourself a priority. Make yourself a priority. And think about it. How many women in general, in marriages in general, never consider what's in their best interest because they're always sacrificing to take care of their spouse or their children, or they're active in their community, right? They're doing things that are helping other people, and it never
mm-hmm.
occurs to them to do something to make themselves a priority. So
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I think is very important, and this is not about being selfish, okay? This is not about being selfish. It's kind of like this. You get your husband the dental appointment. You get the kids the dental appointment. Don't you think you need one too for a, twice a year cleaning? Of course you do. But a lot of women don't think about making themselves a priority and how to take care of themselves. So number one, decide you're going to make a priority of yourself. You're going to ask yourself, what's in my best interest? What's going to contribute to my wholeness and well-being? What's going to bring me a sense of peace and non-anxiousness, a lack of anxiety, a presence of wholeness? Ask yourself that question, okay? And out of that, then, when issues come up, don't react, because a lot of times I've found women want to please everybody. So don't, when you're asked to do something by your husband, and it has, that he's gay and he's out and you're sort of wrestling with all that, when there's something that he wants, take a breath and think about it. How is it going to affect you? And then decide how you're going to respond. And again, that's not being selfish. That's simply engaging in good self-care. It's kind of like I've decided with some people in my life, I never answer the phone directly when they call. I let it go to voicemail because I know my tendency is to do whatever they want right away, or to try to figure out how to accommodate them without thinking of my schedule and all that I have to do to take care of myself and my patients and other responsibilities. So I let it go to voicemail. I hear what it is they want. I contemplate how I can respond in a way that's loving, but not only loving to them, also loving to me.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense so far?
So far.
So far, so good, yeah. So just the mindset of saying, hey, how do I take care of me? is an excellent place to start with setting up appropriate boundaries. Now, you may want to talk about some specifics, and I'm very open to that as well.
I think it's really hard when you're leaving a marriage or splitting up from a marriage and it comes to the children. And, you know, the mothers have had the primary care of the children in many cases. That's just the way that, you know, we're socialized, you know, that women are usually there. That's not to say that fathers don't love them. But a lot of times, for instance, you know, a man is now going into his new life, and it's a gay life, which first women have to understand that. I mean, it's just a very difficult concept to even grasp. And then when you visualize it, it's far, you know, it's very hurtful, and it, you know, you can get sick just thinking about it, because it's one thing, most of our women were really very pro-gay. For other people, they didn't think it was going to be their marriage. It's a totally different phenomenon.
But the thing
is that when it comes to the children, you know, sometimes you just feel that what the husbands are doing will not be in the best interest of the children. And they feel like if they fight it, they're, you know, they just get such resistance. So, like, for instance, when it comes to now that you're split from each other and the father wants to spend time with the children and he has a new boyfriend and he wants that, you know, unit to be part of that family with the children, you know, and the mothers are not comfortable with it, what do you say? Where are the boundaries here?
Well, I think a couple things. Number one, all states now that I'm aware of are requiring parenting agreements. And so I think that's one of the things to bring up during the parenting agreement. The second thing is to recognize that in many cases, when the child is with the father, the mother has no control. And I'm thinking of a specific case with one of my clients, and I'm not going to mention her name, but I know that she would be comfortable with me just talking about this. So so she has a daughter who was in the custody of the father, and father has boyfriend, and they take a trip to bring her from where father lives back home and spend the night at a hotel. And they all sleep in the same room, the two men in one bed and the daughter in another. Daughter is, you know, disturbed by this and speaks to mom about it. And, you know, she was just uncomfortable with this. And, I mean, and the same could be said if it was a man who was divorced his wife and was with a woman. You know, it would be just as uncomfortable for the daughter to be in the same room. It's not as if, you know, these men are engaged. They're not married yet. This is fairly new in their life. She's new to visiting them. It's, you know, they weren't thinking, I don't think the father was thinking ahead of time. But certainly the child's mother had every right to look to the father and say, hey, in the future, consider, you know, consider the feelings of your daughter in this relationship. Don't put her through that. Handle that configuration differently next time.
A lot of men don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. I'm just telling now, Brian.
Oh, yeah, I know, but the woman has the right, the wife and the mother, sorry, the ex-wife and the mother child certainly has the right to talk about this. Now, what the court will stand behind is a whole other thing. The court may say, well, she's in the presence of her father, he has custody, he can do as he pleases. So that's one of those things that all you can do is try to persuade them to give consideration to their relationship with their child and how it affects that relationship.
Yeah, it's not easy. And
no,
after your marriage is over, is there a need to have to be so conciliatory to your ex-husband? I mean, I was for many years when it was totally unnecessary. And there was no win to it. I just felt like I'm a good person. I should be doing it, you know. He's the father of my children, so I'll give him some extra leeway. And even though, you know, it was destructive to me, I kept doing it until I couldn't do it any longer.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you know, as a therapist, I would have been saying to you, if we were talking back in those days and had known each other and I had been where I am today, I would be saying, listen, what does your heart tell you? Is your heart comfortable with this? Or is this coming out of some sense of obligation and doesn't feel like it's really hole-making for you? And if you said to me, well, it doesn't really feel like it's hole-making to me, in fact, it actually continues to bring me more pain, I would say, well, then let's talk about, number one, let's talk about just stopping this behavior. Number two, let's ask why it is you have this need to continue to please, you know. And we would explore that together. But divorce means you're divorced, for goodness sake. You're done. You may be cooperative if you have children to take care of, but you're not obligated to be friends anymore.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, you know, you want to do what's best for the kids. And a lot of times, you know, you feel that's acting as a family unit, even if it's hurtful to you. And I hear parents, women telling me this, well, we had holidays together because we want the children to feel that we're a family, even if we can't live together. But it really hurts when I do it, but I just do it for the kids. And, you know, they feel for the sake of the children, they always want things to go better, like they're taking, it's for their kids' happiness. But is it really? Mm-hmm. I guess in a way it is. I know that it was kind of for me. Always better to make the kids feel like they have a sense of family and that we're not enemies and that we're a team. And especially when you have problems with children, you like to see that there's a united front, even if you can't be living together.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes those boundaries get mixed up.
Yeah, I think they're hard. I think part of it is that, you know, we all engage in various expressions of what is referred to as regret management. In other words, I don't want to regret the effect on my children later, so I may go along with this or that. We may put the best face on this, but it's a trade-off. I think one of the things I find for myself is really helpful. When I'm engaging in that kind of trade-off, it's really helpful for me to be honest with myself and say, I am consciously choosing to do this of my own volition and free will for certain reasons. Here they are. That gives me a little more sense of empowerment and control because I recognize it's not being done to me. I am doing this. And then I will ask myself in those sort of situations, now, how do I take care of myself when this is all said and done?
I think that we need really assertiveness training, that women in general need it, because they don't understand the difference between being a people pleaser or asserting yourself and being aggressive. You know, we're taught and socialized from a very young age as girls, because this is the way society has always been, that you're there to please people, that you're there to take care of people, that that's your role in life. You know, women become mothers because they need to mother their children. They're there to please their husbands. And you hear these messages growing up, even if they're not directly, you know, just through picture, through stories, through television, that women are the nurturers. And I think in a large sense, you know, we are, because that's how we're socialized to be. And I think that many times we don't ask for what we want. We don't understand with assertiveness that it's a matter of standing up for yourself, not being aggressive, but just saying what you want without having to feel guilty because you say it. And I know that I'm certainly have been, you know, certainly somebody who's been non-assertive for many years. It took me years to become assertive, probably not until the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, because it was hard for me to say no to people. I was always looking to please people, and even at the expense of not pleasing me. And that's there's no purpose. You're just letting people drain you all the time.
That's exactly right.
And that's where putting up boundaries starts.
If we're talking about that, that's where I go back to take a breath. Take a breath and ask, how does this affect me, before you respond and agree to do something that you're going to regret having done later.
In other words, you're allowed to say no. And I think that's one of the things we need to understand. But just because you say no doesn't make you difficult, stubborn, you know, argumentative. These are words that are thrown in our faces when we don't want to do something.
Right.
And it's just not with, you know, gay husbands. It's with women who come from dysfunctional types of families or right. where there's abuse when you're growing up to start with. You're always trying to make things better for everybody.
Right.
And the truth is that many of our women do come from homes where there was dysfunction. You know,
right.
they didn't know what a, you know, real normal guideline here was, you know, because they were in a situation of craziness for years themselves with their own families. So now they go from one situation to another situation, and still in all, they don't even understand what they're entitled to for their own lives as far as standing up for themselves and saying, no, this isn't good enough for me. Or no,
right.
I don't want to be in this situation. Instead of saying, well, you know, when people say, well, you made your bed, lay in it. No, you don't have to lay in it. We all
mm-hmm.
make mistakes. You can get up out of bed and you can say, it was a mistake. Let me fix
right.
the mistake. I'm not a
right.
believer
exactly.
in laying in bed with your mistakes. How about you?
Nope, absolutely. Get up and get moving. And another thing, when you do say no, you don't have to explain yourself. Just if it's no, it's no. No, I won't be doing that. Period. Doesn't always
mm-hmm.
require an explanation or defense.
When people say no to us, and yet we don't say anything, but we're so afraid to say no to somebody else because we could hurt their feelings.
Point.
Maybe they won't
right.
hold us in the same esteem. But a lot of
right.
times, people like us become bait for people who are predators,
right.
like narcissists and you know, people
that's
who are
right.
sociopaths, because they see they can control us, take us, mold us to their liking, and that we don't fight
right.
back. And so I always tell
if
women,
you,
when you come out of these marriages, you have to fix yourself because, you know, you've been in a destructive marriage, and your next marriage, it doesn't have to be to a gay man. It just has to be to somebody who's destructive to you. It's not going to
yeah.
work out. You're going to, you
that's
know,
right.
settle for something that you're not, you know, that's beyond, beneath your worth.
Let me share a little story with you about setting boundaries, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when I served in campus ministry at University of California, San Diego for 17 years, we had a bus stop that was ran on the major thoroughfare just behind the church. So we got a lot of people who had no permanent home who would show up on our doorstep, and they would ask, they wanted some sort of handout, usually a monetary handout. They wanted help. Well, we didn't have extra money. We were subsidized by our denomination, but we did put some of our funds into preparing food bags, non-perishable food, and somebody would gather the supplies from Costco and put little food bags together. So at least we could give people who were hungry something to help them deal with their hunger in the moment. So I would have people come to the door, and they would knock on the door. And if I was there, I would go to the door, and they would say, well, I need a bus pass to wherever. Well, we don't have bus passes, but if you're hungry, I have a food bag. No, I don't want a food bag. I need a bus pass. Well, I'm sorry, we don't have those, but I have a food bag. And every time they would come back with what they wanted, I would say, I understand, but this is what I have to give you. I have a food bag. Now, sometimes I would be cursed up one side and down the other, and they would stomp off, and I would put the food bag back in the little pantry where it was kept. Okay, but sometimes I would have people who would look at me and say, you know what, I am hungry, and I'd really be grateful. And I would say, well, would you like a second bag? I really would. Thank you so much. God bless you. And they would go on their way. Here's my point. Say, this is what I can give you. But no, I'm not going to give you exactly what you're asking for. I don't have that to give. Here's what I have to give. and be clear about what it is that you are willing to give and what you don't have to give. And just state what it is, but don't feel badly about saying no when they're asking for something you don't have to give. Okay?
And sometimes not having to give could be something like as simple as time.
That's right.
You know, that you're busy and that you're tired.
That's right.
You have children to raise, family to please, and somebody's just going to keep, you know, asking, and you do have to say no, like you said, to protect yourself sometimes.
That's right. And it's okay. It's okay to say no. You heard it from Bonnie and you heard from Brian tonight. It's okay to say no. And you don't have to justify yourself every time you say no. Sometimes no is all you need to say. No, I won't be
doing
that.
And you don't even have to say, I'm sorry,
me.
I can't do it, right?
That's right. You don't have to. There's no. You don't have to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry when I step on your toes, okay? I'm sorry when I elbow you in the elevator. But no, I'm not sorry for being asked to do something me saying, no, I won't be doing that. But thank you for asking.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking, how hard is it for me to not say I'm sorry, I can't do it. I mean, I'm always sorry. It's a bad habit. I try to break it. You don't have to feel sorry because you're not doing something. It is. I'm telling you, Brian. I work on this every day. You know, setting my own boundaries with people. Because sometimes I am tired, and I never like to say no to anybody who's suffering. You know, so people always say, well, I'm getting your email at 2 in the morning. Yes, because I went for a bathroom break and somebody said I need help, you know, but.
That's right.
And I could wait till 8 in the morning. It's not going to make or break them, right?
That's true. Exactly. Yeah.
It's true. You have to learn how to say no and how to feel good about saying it. You know, I used to teach assertiveness training when, you know, I was working with women. And I gave them some of these little exercises that I know it sounds so silly to people, but for instance, sending back something, a meal, I know that whenever I would go out for dinner when I was younger and a meal would come in and it wouldn't be good, instead of sending it back and saying it's not well done enough or it's too well done, I would just say, well, I just won't eat it, and I paid for it. And then one day I went out, I'll never forget, with my aunt in New York, and she ordered some kind of fish, and when it came, she says, this fish isn't right. I'm going to send it back. I said, oh, you're so brave. She said, what do you mean I'm brave? I said, because I would never really want to tell somebody that. She says, let me explain this to you. She said, I work hard for my money. She said, I'm paying for a dinner. This guy who I'm giving it back to didn't cook it. It just wasn't right. She says, if I'm paying for something, I need to get what I'm paying for.
That's
and
right.
That really helped me. It really did.
Yeah.
That you can say something.
Yes, yes, exactly. You can
so it's little exercises
it's okay.
like that, right?
And let me just note, people often don't know what to do with directness when we are direct. And I found it helpful to say something that's direct and then just be silent and let the silence sit there and not fill it in with more chatter. I just say it the way it is, let it sit there, and let the other person pick it up from there.
I know, it's just so hard. But it can be done. I mean, I am much better than I used to be. I can say no now and not feel terrible about it on many things that I was never able to say no about before. But when I say no, guess what? I feel good.
Of course. And if you're going to have a conversation with your ex or with somebody who's soon to be your ex and you know it's going to be a difficult one, for goodness sake, have a rehearsal. Say it in the mirror. Think about the alternatives that could happen and rehearse it.
And you can always talk to a therapist about it or go to a counselor and say, look, I'd like to do some role playing. You know, I'd like for you to be my ex-husband or my soon-to-be ex and tell me how would you look at different approaches. I mean, I think that's a really good way to spend a session or two in therapy when you have to confront something and you don't know how to do it. Let your therapist be the, you know, other voice, and you can go through lots of different scenarios of how you would handle things, right?
And, well, I do this with men who are getting ready to come out to their wives to help them
mm-hmm.
have the courage to face whatever it is that may come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
the women who are listening out there who are still in their marriages. Yeah, for women who are listening who are still in their marriages, and you say, well, my husband really needs to see somebody. The man they need to talk to is Dr. Hooper. And the good thing is, even though he's in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't have to be. You could be anywhere in the world because he does Skype counseling, phone counseling. And lots of times women say to me, do you know somebody my husband can go to? And I tell them, yes, Dr. Hooper, because that's where they're going to get the right information and the right advice. You know, we're living in a world where there are people who are still not educated to what this situation is about. And therapists who give bad information out because they're basing it on their own personal prejudices or what their lack of knowledge is. You know, I've had one person say recently to a therapist, tell her, well, you can stay together. You know, you live your life. He can live his life. You know, what are you going to break up a whole family for this? I mean, this is in this day and age. This is still the advice people are being given.
Yeah.
So it's really like shattering to me. If you don't get the right resources, and for our women, we're so lucky we have great women in our network who are therapists, and for the men, you know, women go to you, Dr. Hooper, but also the men, this is your best shot of getting your best information out to your, you know, husband or soon-to-be ex-husband about what has to happen in your lives. So how do people reach you? Tell them.
Well, they can visit my website, and there's full contact information there, and that's drbryanhooper.com, and then my phone number's there. There's a way to email me from that website. They can read about my training, and I'm a state-licensed clinical pastoral therapist, and what I do, and feel comfortable before they reach out to me if they need to do that, or they can simply go to your website, and there's a link to my website from your website.
Right.
Too.
Under my links, when you hit the bar for links, you'll see Dr. Hooper there, and you can get all of his information. The important thing is to know that there are honorable resources. You know, my concern is this, Brian, because this happens to me very often when I hear from men. And I do hear from gay men probably 2 to 3 times each day. And, you know, I'm always trying to point them in the right direction. By the time they get to me, you know, they're more open to it. But I've been told numerous times that there are groups out there that support gay men in marriages that tell them, do not tell your wife the real reason that you're leaving the marriage. Don't give her the ammunition that it's because you're gay. Don't let her hold that over you because it will cost you money. You know, and I always say to them, look, you owe this woman the truth.
You
need to tell her because otherwise her life is never going to be back on balance. And I think that one great advantage is that with you, you know they're going to get that advice, right?
They are going to get that advice. And if for some reason I believe that they are best served by seeing somebody in their own physical location, for instance, if they're psychologically very fragile, I think they might go into a clinical depression. I have some back channel ways of finding therapists in their area. I will call them. I will vet them. I will make sure that they're going to get the same level of good, honest care and not be encouraged to lie or deceive or stay in a marriage they shouldn't be in before I would ever refer them. So, you know, for those men who are, you know, they don't have a clinical issue, we can do the long distance stuff, and that's the majority of men. For a few men who've been, you know, have psychological diagnoses, I make sure I get them connected up with a real good therapist that I vet. And interestingly enough, you know, you may not be surprised, but maybe some of your therapists are. A lot of psychotherapists are gay men. And I have ways of networking with them to make sure that, you know, we're on the same page. And I get the guys connected up. I did this twice in the last 30 days, okay, for some gentlemen who really needed to see somebody locally. So I'm not going to abandon them. I'm going to make sure they get good care.
Yes. So that's my best advice to you. And as far as learning how to set boundaries, it's a very difficult process. It can be done with lots of practice. And if it doesn't work the first time, the important thing is not to say, oh, I can't do this. You know, if it doesn't work the first time, you'll say, okay, maybe I should think about how I do it next time. But if you don't have boundaries and you allow yourself just to be pushed around, even if you're not married anymore, it's going to continue. And you're never going to be able to move into your own authentic new life without having this baggage, you know, backing you up all the time. So it's really important that you learn how to do these things. And if you need help, write to me, you know, or get in touch with Dr. Hooper. He can do counseling with you also to teach you how to really get out of these situations in a healthier way. The main thing is that people need to be mentally healthy. And I think that when you're coming out of these marriages, you're not. Even if you think you are, you're not. Because you've been living a life that's not really been an honest life. It's been deceptive. There's so many issues and questions you're not sure of. And you've personalized things for so many years because when things weren't going right, you always thought they were your fault. So if you don't learn to pick your life up and put it back in shape and understand what went wrong and how that you're not the one at fault, these are circumstances beyond, you know, anything that you could do, that you're going to keep finding these relationships that are not worth your while. So do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And sort of a closing thought on boundaries, Bonnie, is if any of the hearers have the sense that they only know that they can feel okay if everybody else around them feels okay, that's a real indication that they need to work on distinguishing themselves from others, embracing their true self, working on their own self-love. Because when I'm dependent on you for me to be okay, but my happiness is dependent upon you being happy and satisfied all the time, I'm always going to be teetering on the brink of not being okay because, hey, you may be up one day and down the next. Well, if that's the way they have lived their lives and their relationship, then they need to get a new relationship with themselves so that they can separate themselves from the man that they're divorcing or have divorced and have a healthy sense of self. And only when we really have a healthy sense of our own self and love ourselves are we really available to be in a healthy relationship with anyone.
Mm-hmm. And that is so true. If you can't love yourself, nobody else is going to love you enough.
That's
right. You have to love yourself enough to say, you know what, I don't need somebody just to hang on to. I need somebody who can love me as much as I love myself. But that won't happen if you don't learn how to love yourself. So that's why I always tell our women, don't rush into anything.
Amen.
Take your time and heal. Do the work.
That's right.
Then you're just going to crash again. I see it time after time with women who write to me and call me and say, Bonnie, I should have listened to you. I wasn't ready, and I settled for less than I wanted, and it was a disaster. So these are some really good tips. And for Valentine's Day, I know that Dr. Hooper will send his love to all our women, right?
Absolutely. And be your own Valentine this year.
That's right.
Do something nice
for you.
You
can love yourself. You don't need somebody else to love you. As long as you love you, you're in number one place. So, Brian, I do love you, and thank you so much for contributing every month in and month out to our women and making them always feel better about themselves.
Well, Bonnie, I love you, and it's my pleasure. I'm glad we can team up and help some folk.
Yeah, and I'll be talking to you at the end of February as we approach March.
Dear.
All right. Love you, and love to our women this week. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.